So this is I want to start with an idea which I mentioned before, other years with pre-Pesach. That over the years I've spoken to people, they come to the Seder, and one of the challenges they have by the Seder, or one of the, in their minds, the challenges they have by the Seder, is what is the message they're supposed to be saying? And it's compounded by the fact that sometimes people feel that they have to say Divrei Torah, and they have to look up Divrei Torah, and they have to prepare, and some people feel inadequate in doing that. And maybe it's even more compounded by the fact that their children go to school and come back with various different Divrei Torah, and the children are more learned than they are. So if the father is, it's become he got it to Levicha as opposed to he got it to Bincha, and people feel a little bit intimidated by saying something when they know that their son might shlug them up, or their daughter might even shlug them up, or both of them will shlug them up, you know. So they get intimidated. And obviously that's not what we want to happen. We want the person to feel very confident, comfortable, that he has something he wants to say. And my answer has been, and the message I've been trying to say is that I think that people go approach the Seder sometimes incorrectly. That the purpose of the Seder is not to say Divrei Torah. There is a concept called Marbel Saparezim Meshubach, which the Shulchan Aruch says that a person should continue even after the Seder is finished to talk about the Nisim and Niflos, and also the Halachos of Pesach. So there is such a concept. So you can say a Pshat in the Rambam afterwards if you want to say Pshat in the Rambam. But there's no goal while you're during the Haggadah itself to say Pshat in the Rambam Shita about why we do X versus Y in the Chagas Yerushalmi and the Bavli, etc. That's not what we're trying to accomplish. The Rambam, when he says Kolamar B'Lasaper, the Rambam says the Kolamar B'Lasaper B'Mashi Iru V'Hoyu, that which actually took place. So the Rambam, when he defines Kolamar B'Lasaper, means it's the details of the story which a person wants to expand upon, not specifically explanations and all of the quotes and the psukim and the drushes and the yukim and why it said this versus that and the mamam shat versus somebody else's shat, etc. That's not the goal. The goal is to expand on the story. But beyond that, the night of Pesach is a mitzvah higata l'bincha, which is you want to give over a message to your children. What is the message you want to give to your children? What is the goal for the night? Well, that you have to decide for yourself. You are, as an adult, with life experience and understanding of a relationship that you have with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, which has a depth to it, which only an adult can have, through the challenges that a person has lived through and through the experience a person has developed an understanding what Hashem means to him, and what Torah means to him, and what Yiddishkeit means to him. That's what you want to give over the night of Pesach. You want to find ways to give over what's really valuable and important to you to other people. That's your goal. You want to be magid what you believe and what you understand and what's important to you. And it doesn't have to be deep philosophical concepts. It can be very basic concepts, because really the goal is to review the basic concepts. We're not looking to say a major shikul Torah. We're really not looking to say a major shikul Torah. I heard a mashal which I liked very much. We find that the Haggadah says that if etc. We have a mitzvah to say the story. So a person gave me an analogy, gave from a story which he had. It says, one year on their anniversary, so his wife made a dinner, and they have they set up dinner near where they have a computer monitor, and they put the wedding video in, and they watched the video together. That was their anniversary evening together. They had a nice dinner, and they watched the wedding video. So he says, I knew I was married. I knew I had a wedding. Right? I didn't learn any new chedushim by watching the wedding video that I didn't. Right? But there was a certain warmth and emotion which came by watching the video. And we didn't have to discuss any deep philosophical concepts to get that emotion. The night of Pesach is the night of the wedding video. You don't have to say big shtiklach Torah. All you have to do is say over the story. A Kadosh Baruch Hu wed Klal Yisrael. And that itself should create a chibah, should create a warmth, should create a connection. If we look at our own lives, each person is different. Each person has the messages which resonate with them and which are important to them. And really what you want to do is, if we can use the phrase, you want to pick 2, 3, 4, 5 messages which are important to you. You really feel very strongly about that this is something which you want to impart to your children. and then find an excuse, if you can use the word, in the Haggadah to say it. Right? So let's work backwards. The famous mashal with the Maggid, that somebody asked him how he's always has a mashal which is on target. How's it work? He answered it with a mashal. Right, of course. He says this fellow is traveling, and he comes along and he sees that there's this barn, and on this barn there's target practice from archery, and there's targets on the barn, and everyone has an arrow exactly in the bullseye. He says, this fellow is a phenomenal archer. I need to meet this guy. See, he knocks on the door and says, Mr. Farmer, I couldn't help notice. I went by and I see that your prowess in archery is phenomenal. Every one of those, the arrow is in the middle of the bullseye. How do you do it? He says, it's very simple. I shoot the arrow and then I draw the target afterwards. Right? So the Maggid answered, I first start with the story and then I find the message which fits with it. So we're going to do the same idea in a different way. We're going to start with our message and then find the excuse in our Haggadah what to do with it. So what I've done, and again, this is my list, so I call it suggested because it's only suggestions. So some messages which we might want to impart to our children. And I made a suggestion of 18 of them, and hopefully some of them, something will resonate with you. And if not, you can come up with your own. And that's exactly the point. You should come up with your own. I color-coded them because I think they're made in units, somewhat in units. And then the second handout, actually, which was we made a chart. I made a chart. My wife helped it look normal. Of these topics across the top, and the parts of Maggid across down the left, and I put my checks where I believe you can fit any one of those ideas in. Again, this is my list. You can do your own list, right? But I was nice enough to make you a list of all the parts of the Haggadah, so that itself is an accomplishment, right? So if you're walking with nothing tonight other than that, that's an accomplishment. It took me a while to actually do this. I was proud of myself, but I'm not sure that I was. Anyway, so let's look at some of the message, and then maybe we can... And then my last part to it is, I think that for this to be effective... Many times it's much more effective if you can say, add a personal element as well. If you give it your own personal example, if you're talking about, let's say for the argument's sake, I feel very strongly that I want to give a message to the people at my Seder, the importance of understanding that we're part of a tzibur. Okay, so did I have a life experience where I felt that very significantly? And share that. And sometimes it may be something which is, because it's more personal, it will resonate more, I will say it more passionately and more strongly, and the hearers will pick it up in that way. And then I can maybe move back to where we see that in the Haggadah as such. It's a common thing that many people have. I know my mother-in-law, Alel Shalom, did this every year by the Seder. She would say over something from her experiences that she lived through the war. And she would say over one or two of those stories. Usually did it towards the during the meal, not during the Haggadah itself. And the kids would get a chance to hear what it means, emuna and bitachon. My mother-in-law, Alel Shalom, was a woman with tremendous emuna, tremendous bitachon. The fact that she walked around with a smile on her face, considering what she went through in her life, it's like, there's many people who have the good excuse of went through the same things, and it was difficult for them. And then she would say a story or two which would resonate, and you would walk away. And some of the things that I said by her levaya were things which I'd heard from her many times. That I definitely heard them the night of the Seder, and they went in. And the messages, which you know, one example, just talking about them when I'd be talking, I try to understand. Every night before she was in the forest with the partisans, every night before she went, she would lie down. She would say, Hashem, please let me find the tree which will be safe that I can make it till the morning. Because there's people who didn't make it to the morning because the bullet came, a bomb came, and the Germans were shooting into the forest, and there's people who didn't make it to the morning. And every night she said that line. I said, like, where did she get this strength? She was a 15-year-old girl all by herself in the forest. And one time she mentioned that, you know, when she was a little girl, every night when her father would put her to bed, her father's message is this gay, you know, Shlofkes, the message is in Yiddish, but you know, but she would say, Shlofkes, and then she would, tomorrow Mashiach will be here. That's how he put her to bed every single night. That was the message. There's hope. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was there. Mashiach will be here tomorrow. And this was done every single night. Now, you can imagine hearing that story by the Seder. We're talking about what's going to be the Gula Asida. We talk about the part of the Gula which talks about the Gula Asida. And here's a person who lives with that reality. It's a strong message to the participants which were there, to the grandchildren, the children of the grandchildren, etc. I know that it made a very strong impact on me. So if you can add your own personal piece, right? So that's why the picture, if you look at the picture, it has the jigsaw puzzle. So that was why you add your own personal piece. Okay, sweet. Please don't do that. Or if you had a question.
I'm looking at the categories, and could you enlighten me as to why there is no category of Gula Hasida, Eretz Yisrael? I don't see anything like that.
You know, you're right.
It's a very integral
point. You're right.
I'll tell you what made me think of it. Basically, there was a show many years ago. It was called Shoah. So the guy took videos of not of Nazis, but basically of the participants or the people in Europe that just sat quiet while the trains were going. They were right near the towns, and he was interviewing one Polish, Ukrainian. It's all the same to me. But he asked, he was talking with him, and he said that he told the Jews as they were being carted off. He said, look, I believe in the Old Testament too. You know, God saved you then. Why isn't he saving you now? Maybe he gave up on you. He doesn't care about you anymore. And that's how it was left, and it was basically left until Eretz Yisrael came. Now, no matter what you say, whether it is a skull of the Gula, it's not a skull of the Gula, any way you want to look at it, it's definitely a change.
Correct.
Okay. And that would be, and in plenty of the things that you have a list of, it talks about the Gula Hasida.
100%.
I'm just wondering why that's not one of the categories.
So now you're number 19.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right, great. Excellent. That's exactly what we want to accomplish. We want you to find something you want to say. Mm-hmm. Right? So these are my suggestions. I could give you, I actually have, to your specific question, we do mention the Gula Asida. We do mention the Gula Asida in the Haggadah. We do it in the second half of the Haggadah after. We wait. The Ikar place we mention it is after the Suda.
Lefichach is before.
That the number of the Shira Chadasha, the halacha says, was referring to the one we said then. We do ask the Shergalon, regardless of the saying, we do medaven, we should be zaken at the mikdash again.
Right.
But in general, the focus is much more backwards than forwards. That's one of the reasons why the explanation. If you look at the psukim which we base our drasha on in Parshas Kisavoy, there actually are six psukim there. We use four of them. So the sixth psukim, the first one is Rami Yovidovi.
Right.
And we went down to Mitzrayim. So that's the topic of the first pasuk. We went down to Mitzrayim. Right. The topic of the second pasuk is that the Mitzrayim afflicted us.
Right.
The topic of the third pasuk is we davened to Hashem. The topic of the fourth pasuk is Hashem took us out. The fifth pasuk is Hashem brought us to Eretz Yisrael. The sixth pasuk is that I'm bringing my Bikurim. So obviously the sixth pasuk is not relevant to the night of the Seder. We're not bringing Bikurim the night of the Seder. The question is, why don't we darshan the fifth pasuk as well by the Seder? So actually, if you look at the Haggadah Shlema for Menachem Kasher, he actually brings some Rishonim who said in the time when we lived in Eretz Yisrael and they had the Mikdash, they actually did darshan the fifth pasuk as well. And this is the question, do we have a fifth cup? Hevesi Kenega, the fifth cup. However, some of them, unfortunately, say that the night of Pesach we don't, because we want to focus. The main focus is on the Yetziyah. And the Chinuch in his Pirish on Mitzvah Siris HaOmer, he says obviously the main purpose wasn't the Yetziyah, the main purpose was the Kabbalah Satara. He says, but we count Siris HaOmer the next night, because we don't want to take away the focus on the first night of the Yetziyah. Then the next night we say, okay, that's very nice, but what's the purpose? And then we go to the next. So even though we do mention it in different places, that's not the focus. So that's one suggestion why I didn't focus on that. Other factions, if that's something which resonates with you, go for it, 100%. Okay. So what I want to do is I want to go through maybe briefly the some of the points on the list. I'm not going to go through every one of them. If you look, I color-coded them because I believe they really go together in units. So I don't have to go through every, therefore I don't have to go touch on every one of them. And then we'll maybe give a few examples, and I'll give you a few examples of maybe a personal story that I have, and I hope that that will strike a chord and cause you to have a personal story as well. So the first three is how do we view ourselves? How does a Jew view himself? So we view ourselves that we're not the beginning of the Kenan B'l'Kei Avosenu. We go back to Avraham Avinu. And obviously the place in the gutter which is going to jump out at you is Mitchilo Evdei V'Nazar Hay Avosenu Masher Kavanas Amokam Lava Nesoy. We could talk about Asher Galonu Goalas Avosenu. We could talk about Avraham Avinu L'Far Mitzrayim Ilo Hitzio Hoyo Anu V'Neinu V'Nei V'Neinu B'Shem Inu. We're all, we're in generations all there. This, we go back to, we have a long, long Masara. We're part of a tzibur. This is actually fascinating. More and more talks about the concept that tzibur lemeis, and so really it's one long tzibur. Tzibur lemeis means even each individual people die, but the tzibur never ends. So the reality is the tzibur started 3,300 years ago, and it never ended. It's still the same tzibur. The analogy to that would be that you have a body. You know, the truth of human being is created. Besides our hashkafa, but scientifically, the scientists will tell you that, you know, all your cells are new. The cells die and new cells are created. But I still look the same, right? But I'm constantly recreating. But the main body we're referring to doesn't really change. So Klai Yisrael main body, the body of Klai Yisrael is one. So we really, myself and Avraham Avinu and Moshe Rabbeinu and David HaMelech and Chizkiyahu HaMelech and Abai and Rava and the Rambam, we're all one tzibur. So that's part of our concept of Masorah, that we're a continuation of that reality. And of course, we would like that to move to the concept where we view ourselves as part of the tzibur. So a message would be that they're having responsibility for the community, communal responsibility. And those are three, maybe that's one unit we could talk about. It's something which, if that resonates strongly with us, the idea of feeling they're part of something greater. A story which I experienced with this, you know, which I've said it over at different occasions. I was once visiting somebody in the hospital, in the mental health ward. And as I walked in, I came to visit one individual. The nurse sees me and says, "Rabbi, you know, we have an Orthodox young man over here. Could you please visit him?" So I stopped by him as well. This young man, sadly enough, had attempted to take his own life. He was a 17-year-old boy.
How old?
17. Boy with his yarmulke sitting on his head, you know. And so I sat down, I was talking with him, and then he started sharing some of the difficulties in his life, some frustrations, etc. It's very sad. And I asked him, Do you daven? Do you have an outlet? Do you talk? He says, "Shem doesn't want to hear from me. Who am I? I'm a nobody." So arguing with him, he says, "Somebody is going to be a hard argument. You know that I'm not going to get anywhere with that." So I said to him, "Why do we start with necessarily with the lekeinu? Why is that? We start with that." So I come to a very important person, and I said, "You know, I would like some help." He says, "Who are you?" He says, "I'm not really such an important person, but my Zaidi and you were good friends. So, you know, you don't want to do it because of me, you do it because of my Zaidi." So he starts to announce, "Lekeinu v'lekei Avosenu, lekei Avraham, lekei Yitzchak, lekei Yaakov." Rachel, listen, you know, me, Reingold, no. Reingold's not such a great guy. Why should you answer Reingold? But my Zaidi and you were good friends. You and Avraham were really tight, as they would say nowadays. All right? So, you know, in the schus of Avraham, the schus of Yitzchak, the schus of Yaakov, in my Zaidi's schus, you know, answer me. So I said, "You're right. Okay, I'm not going to argue with you that you're worthy or not worthy of tefillah." Right? I said, you know, that I tried to move that a little bit, that he didn't want to budge on that. But says, "But you're part of a greater tzibur. You're part of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael has, because we're Avraham, the children of Avraham, and Yaakov, we have a schus." That's a story which has, you know, I remember that story. It hit home to me. Like, sometimes we need to feel that we're connected to something greater than ourselves to have a right to daven, to exist. To feel that we have a right to expect something in our lives. Okay, and the opposite side of that is obviously is the common responsibility. Baruch Hashem, he's still with us. Okay.
I mean, have you seen progress?
I haven't kept up with him. You know. Yeah.
Why is it Tzibur checked only by Russia and the Israeli Shomer?
Okay, so we'll get to that. And then the next half of the week, common responsibilities. If you look at Nagana for these, this is my checking, and you can do your own. I challenge you to do your own. I offer you to do your own, however you want to say it. It took me a long time to do these checks, you know, just give me a little bit of credit.
That's why I'm asking.
So by the four bonim, so the Russia, the fish hotiatum in a cloud, kafar be'ikr. So that's a strong language. That the Chazal is saying, you know, we use the word kafar be'ikr, a person denies the existence of Hashem and the presence of Hashem. Right? That's called kafar be'ikr. And here we're using the same phrase. If you feel, you don't understand the significance and the importance of a tzibur of Klal Yisrael, you're kafar be'ikr. So here, the Baal HaGadah is making this major message. Perceive yourself as part of something greater than yourself. And maybe the reason why you're a Rasha is because when you perceive yourself as not being something greater, it's hard to feel connected, it's hard to feel committed. But if you would see yourself as part of something greater than yourself, well, you wouldn't be a Rasha. Right? So we have things, the message to a child would be, I were times when I want to do something wrong, I'm not really interested, I'm not really committed, but if I understand that I'm on the boat, and when I drill the hole under my seat, it's my seat, to do whatever I want, I paid for it, pay good money, yeah, but the ship's going down with all of us. I'm part of something bigger. So that's responsibility, that's also a schus, right? So maybe that's why the Russia is, the Russia is a Russia, because he doesn't see himself like that. And any day Elisha, the pasuk which we actually use to say that to him is the pasuk for the any day Elisha, which that's an interesting conversation. But that's one of the Shikla Torah, which we're not going to do right now. Okay.
Can I say one?
You know, maybe we hold it because I want to recover. Okay. The second four units, I think I have them color coded, is Emunah. Obviously, the night of Pesach is the night of Emunah. I call you so. Anoch Hashem lekechlo. The mitzvah of Hamuna, according to the Rambam. Asher sitzichem yatsu tzomim beis avodim. And all the mishnayim grapple with why Asher sitzichem. Why do you say Hashem? Asher brosh shemayim bor. Hashem isn't limited to Yisrael Mitzrayim. Hashem is the source of everything. But that Yisrael Mitzrayim was our vehicle. The vehicle through which we know Hashem is through Yisrael Mitzrayim. And the Rambam has his Yud Gimel Likrim, and actually. The Sefer, come on, my mind's blanking right now. Derek Pikudecha. The Derek Pikudecha says you can find all of the Yud Gimel Ikrim of Emunah somewhere in the Haggadah. So if you want to make a challenge for you have a more learned crowd, and while you're talking maybe to some of the younger participants and trying to give a message which is more basic, because they, okay, here's your homework. Find the Yud Gimel Ikrim in the Haggadah somewhere. It's not easy to find all of them, and some of them are like pretty tenuous. I don't think he meant that. I think he meant really solidly they're all there. So that's a good challenge. If you come back with a good answer, let me know. Okay, but I focus in a few of them because a few of them are very, very obvious and very, very, that's a message even for somebody not so learned, no, it's not so much background. A basic message is Hashem exists. He's in control. Hashem knows. Hashem cares. Hashem takes care of us. There's schar and there's anush. There's punishment to the mitzriim. These are very basic messages. These are very important messages. I want to live with those messages. I want to be able to take that message into my own life. That's going to be the source of my avot, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the next step. It's going to be the source of my Yerushalayim. It's going to be the source of many things in my life. I need to get that message. Where am I going to get that? Right? So we go back to this moment, and I spoke in the yeshiva recently, I spoke about the makas. And I look at the makas, and everybody has their pet peeves, you know, I mean, we write the pet peeves, like that's part of being, you know, being Jewish. You know? I have a strong dislike for plastic frogs. I have a very strong dislike for ping pong balls. And the night of the Seder, they represent that bora, these ping pong balls. Plastic grasshoppers just doesn't do it for me. Right? Not just doesn't do it for me, it gets me upset. So the Baruch already heard this. I'm going to have to live with this again, but that's tough luck. It says, I am more in favor of, if you want to take one of the makas, just take one of the makas and stop and truly contemplate what was the impact of a maka on Mitzrayim. And we did this in Yeshiva, we did this with makas dam, we did this makas becharis. Now there's two pshatim in the Medrash. One opinion says that the Medrash says that makas dam, each maka lasted for 7 days. The warning was 3 weeks prior. The other opinion of the matter says that the makkah lasted for 3 weeks, and the warning was for 1 week, and the makkah was for 3 weeks. So imagine for a moment that according to that opinion, the makkah was for 3 weeks long. It was 3 weeks long of dam. There's no water available. You wanted water, you had to buy it from a Jew. If you had money, you bought water. If you didn't have money, you died. There's people dying in the streets. Let's picture that. Now, none of the Mitzrayim had money. And I would have been hard to put to believe that the Mitzrayim were like giving stock at each other. You can't afford any water. Here's someone to go buy one. But the guy, I think the Mitzrayim were like the type, like, let him die, you know. Like, he doesn't have any money. Tough luck on him. The animals, could you afford to pipe water for all your animals? Probably not. Animals were dying on the streets. Can you imagine the smell? Well, what's with the plants? What's with the crops? Were the animals plowing the fields? What animals? Were you irrigating the fields? With what? The crops were dying. And you had to get it from whom? From the Jews. The lowly Jew. Can you imagine the emotional impact of that? Imagine the manly feeling of the father of the home. And he can do nothing. He's powerless. So of course he's going to be frustrated. So his wife's going to, you know, say a comment, and he's going to blow up at her, and there's going to be major shalom bias problems, you know, and it'll hit his wife, you know, and she'll run out, and you know, whatever. And then the kids will scream, and the house is, their family life is falling apart. Their economy was falling apart. The human beings were dying on the streets. The smell was horrible. People didn't have strength to deal with all the issues, emotionally, mentally, physically, economically, financially, spiritually. Their God. This is their God. Their whole foundation of belief was destroyed. I think an atom bomb is a better picture of Makas Dam than frogs. Like, you know, or you bring a cup of like red liquid to the table. Ah, Dam. And you pour it so the kids see what Dam is. I would more suggest, which I mean maybe is a little bit too graphic, you go to the library, or you go to the computer, you see how old I am, right? And you get a picture of Hiroshima after the atom bomb, and you show that to your children. That's Makas Dam. Okay, now imagine the Jews, what they're feeling during the moment. Now, can we say that the Jews felt abandoned, possibly, some of them? They've been waiting and waiting and waiting. You know, Loyal Lena, you can say the phrase, you know, what Wade Klausel described, the Mitzrayim, the concentration camps were not so far, it wasn't so far different what the Germans did for 86 years. People were born and died in concentration camps. Not 5 years. I'm not diminishing. I'm not in any way trying, in any way, Chas V'Shalom, to but 5 years, you talk to people, went through five, the people who live in Poland, right? The war started in September of 39, and it ended, they were liberated by the Russians in January of 45. It was 5 years and 4 months, 5 months. And look what the toll it took upon them. Okay, now picture 86 years of that. And all of a sudden, look what bursts onto the scene. It's not the Allies dropping bombs. It's this power which says he's the God who cares about us. He says, I'm going to, and look what he does to the Mitzrayim. Imagine, wow, there's hope. Hope all comes into their hearts. It's like a whole new world that they're being introduced to. Yeah, they have this kingdom saying that there was, you know, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and there's a bris, and there's a promise, and Hashem cares about us, and right, you know, if you could say those phrases, like they believed it, they internalized it, they were grappled with it. And Moshe Rabbeinu was wondering, will they believe me? They believed. And then, they asked Moshe, what's going on? And then comes down. 3 weeks of Dam, according to this measure. They see the Mitzrayim are knocking on the doors for buying water. Now, they're Jews. They didn't charge cheap. Come on, you know, this is a good business opportunity. They charge through the nose. So Mitzri came the first day, you know, said, well, he says, water? Yeah, water. Water's very free. You don't have any water? Really? Yeah, a bucket of water. We handle a bucket of water. I'm not sure exactly what was the currency in Mitzrayim. It says, $10,000 would be good for a bucket of water. $10,000? Okay, $9,000. I can't afford it. So it's okay, so die. The Nazi comes knocking on your door. He says, I'd like some water. Do me a favor. He says, okay, we'll talk. Business. $1 million. I can't afford it. Okay, tough luck on you. Because the next, I need more water. He says, well, I'm sorry. I ran out of money. Okay. Clean my toilets, please. You know? The emotional boost that for Klal Yisrael. The Pasuk says there's a mitzvah to say over Kishbaruch Hu Asher, he's halal to Mitzrayim. The Bershom teased, he played with Mitzrayim. That's part of the chiz of Klal Yisrael. The Bershom couldn't say, one day, just take, lift Klal Yisrael up, a confident assurance, bring it there. It's like, what do we need this whole Makkos thing for? What's it for? And actually, according to the Targum Yonasan, that's what the Bershom did. Ben Uziel says that Yonali Kachim outside of Eretz Yisrael. So how did the Korban Pesach? So Hashem did an ace. Bar Targum Yonasan says that Hashem took all of Klal Yisrael the night of Pesach and moved them to Yerushalayim, and they ate the Korban Pesach in Yerushalayim. Then he brought them back. Why did he bring them back? Just stay there already. That wasn't the goal. The goal was the process of Yisrael Mitzrayim. But obviously the Russian didn't need to do this. I mean, Haraya, he did it. I mean, I don't know. If I would, I'd say, worship, please, just let me stay already. I'm not happy here. You know? No. We got to go back. And go through the process of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. The Makkos left an tremendous impact on Klal Yisrael. Schar and Anish. Hashkotas Hashem. Yedias Hashem. So, do we have that? Have we experienced that in our lives? And we experienced that moment where we felt the Hashkach of Kadosh Baruch Hu very, very strongly. where, you know, I would like my children to know that, you know, there's part of my story. Right? My personal story, I'm about Shuvah. How did I become from? It wasn't that one day I woke up and, you know, had a deep philosophical. There was a story which A led to B, led to C, led to D. And it's almost like you put all the pieces together, you say, wow, Kadosh Baruch Hu made me from. It's almost like you said, Rangel, here, you're going to become through. Here, I'm going to make things happen. So many steps may happen that it's like almost like you have no choice. I mean, it's still Bechira, but like, he made it happen. Okay, that's a dramatic story. We all have, we see Ashkocha. There was a beautiful pamphlet which came out. Reb Chaim Friedland, the Zichron Livracha, the Mashkiach in Pan Sheshiva, Talmud of Reb Dessler, and actually the person who was responsible for putting out the first volumes of Mitzvah Milyo, he and Rabbi Yekamel together, Zichron Livracha. And he was sick at the end of his life. He was very sick. And he made a project called Hove No Niras Yad Hashem. Let's go see Hashem's hand in our lives. And he gave out pamphlets with empty pages. And the job was, each day you write a story of a Hashkocha that happened to you. Notice something which happened, which worked out, but you had like, wow, how that happened? Wow, look, Hashem did something, took care of me. Do it for a week now before Pesach and come to the Seder with three stories, four stories, simple things. I happen to have, I mean, my you know, it's a little negative tefillah as well also, but I have my mishugas. I have to go downtown. Going downtown, you have to find a parking spot. So what's the solution? Daven for a parking spot. So that's what I do. Whenever I go down the Red Fork, by the way, the Russian, please, I need to find a parking spot. I always find one. Like, suddenly, I boom, there's a spot. Wasn't there before. The guy pulls out just in front of me. Okay, you know, one time, two times, five times, like it's really like, you know, like my wife someone told me, didn't find a friend, says, did you daven? I said, I forgot. So what do you want? Of course you didn't get a spot. You didn't daven. The times I daven, I got. Is it gross in my shirt? But you tell it over to your kids, you know. I have to tell you, the last 10 times I went downtown, every time whenever I davened, I got a parking spot. When I didn't, I paid through the nose into the parking garage. Hashkachas Hashem, gross amices, but it's a message. And the kid hears a story like that. It's a very simple story. Right? The adult hears a story like that. It sinks in. Okay. So where are you going to find that in the Haggadah? So if you look in the ones, belief in Hashem, Yedias Hashem, 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 there's a lot of checks there. You know, it's hard not to find that in the Haggadah. You know, it's like you go down the list, you know, Avadim Hayinu, so belief in Hashem, Yedias Hashem, the Chochem, what's the Eidus and the Chukim, the Mitzchil of David Azora, okay, Bershom Haftachosa, Hishamda, Rami Avidavi, you name it, you put it in, you can find it. Whatever speaks to you. You know, that's fairly, I think, one of the most obvious parts of the Haggadah. There are, I didn't put the numbering on the side, how many ones, it's like about 50, is it almost 50, about 40 something lines of different parts of the Haggadah from the beginning, from Kiddush till the end of Maggid. Somewhere along the line you should find something which works for you on that one. Okay, I don't think we need to belabor that one. Hashem loves Klal Yisrael, we love Hashem. So the Makkos, I think that's a strong message. That was part of the message of the Makkos. That Hashem loves Klal Yisrael. Hashem, you know, why did Hashem wait until now? The Bershom has his Chishbarnus. But look what the message, I once heard from Moshe Eisman from the Yisrael. The Bershom, we know, Chazal say it to us very clearly that the Bershom does not like destroying human beings. The Bershom says, the more Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, when a Bershom has to kill a Rosha, and a Rosha is killed by Bezdin, what does Kosh Baruch Hu say? The Shekhinah says, Kilani Miroshi, Kilani Mizrael, I feel heavy. I feel heavy in my head, I feel heavy in my arm. We killed a Rosha. But if I ever Sharmina, no, I feel heavy. The Melachim come to say Shira by Trias Yamsuf. Masayana Tav Mayam, Tav Mavakshim Lor Mashira. Rosha's not happy when he has to destroy Mitzrayim. So what does that say to Klal Yisrael when we know that, and we see Kadosh Baruch Hu did it anyway? You're so important to me that I'll do something I don't really like to do, but for you I'll do it. There's a tremendous message of the Bershom's care for Klal Yisrael, the Bershom's love for Klal Yisrael. I'll do it for you. I don't like it, but for you I'll do it. And I'll do it quite extensively, you know, in Mitzrayim it was 10 makas, Eliyahu was 50 makas. In Mitzrayim, it was each makkah was four parts, and it says 40. And Aliyam was 200. 200 makkahs the Russian gave. Why? Because he loves Klal Yisrael. It's such a powerful message. And we would like to, you know, reflect back. We have Avot HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We feel that love. We feel that care. We feel that concern. We feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking care of us, interested in us, and concerned about us. And we talk to him, and he talks back to us, and he takes care of us, and we feel that warmth, and feel that love. Chofetz Chaim says that we have mitzvah avos Hashem, so it's a mitzvah tamidi. So because it's a mitzvah tamidi, it's very important. But it's not a maisa mitzvah, it's nothing active that you do. So because it's, we sometimes forget to do it. You say every morning in Shema, v'havta Hashem lekecha b'chol levavcha, you should stop that and think about Avos Hashem. You got to do it at least once a day, because it's Tamidi, you should never do it a day at all. Tefillin, you put on once a day. Since you put on Avos Hashem, which is counting, you never do. Right? That's ridiculous. So he says you at least do it once a day. So you say the Pesukim, if I have to, so what do? You think about how Kadosh Baruch Hu takes care of us, and how everything is done with tremendous hashkafa and tremendous cheshbon. And there's such beauty in the world, and such symmetry in the world, and there's such intelligence that things make so much sense. And you're responding to that, the Chavetz Lavava says, and you feel the Ava of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Story, which I use for that. There's some of you probably saw this story in the Washington Post a few years back about Joshua Bell. Joshua Bell is this violin virtuoso. Eventually made it to an H.com story, something like that. But I read it in the Washington Post. So the story in the Washington Post is much longer than the story which is quoted over there. So he's here in Washington, D.C. to receive an award for his contribution to violin music in the world. He's one of the greatest violin players in our times. So Washington Post asked him if he'd be willing to take part of a social experiment. And what was that? They put him in the L'Enfant Plaza metro station Monday morning during rush hour with his Stradivarius violin, playing one of the most intricate and difficult pieces of violin music. It takes 40 minutes to play the piece. And he played it in front of thousands of people which are going by to their to catch the train. And they put a video camera watching him do this. And they were curious to see how many people are going to stop and listen. And they took bets beforehand. They went to this conductor and this, you know, maestro of music, Joshua Bell, 100 people will stop, you know, 50 people will stop, 200 people will stop, 7 people stopped. Over the period of time, they counted over 1,000 people went by, 7 people stopped, and the one who stayed the longest was a little child who the mother was trying to schlep away. So the name of the article is Pearls Before Breakfast. So I read this article, and the next morning I'm walking to yeshiva and saying, you know what, I have the same problem. I get up, Baruch Hashem, I get up early, and I walk, and it's a nice day out. It's a very pleasant walk. And I hear the birds singing, and the sun's coming up, and the beautiful sky, and the clouds. That's much better, that's much more beautiful pearls than Joshua could ever come up with. And I also don't hear it. I also don't notice it. The same way, they went by with this gorgeous piece of music, and just like didn't even notice it. I hear the same orchestra every single morning, much more beautifully. And so I don't notice it either. So, I stopped. It was still a little dark out, and I looked up at the stars. I just stood there for a minute. I can't wait to shear. And I just like, it's quiet at that time. It's a great time to get up early in the morning like that, because it's quiet. And I just enjoyed being in this world with such beauty, the Russia made such beauty, and feeling his presence, and feeling his love. And I just stopped there and felt enveloped in his love. Such a beautiful moment. So that's my story. You can say your own story, you know, whatever it is. But the part of the message of the night of the Seder is Hashem loves Klal Yisrael. Okay, belief in ourselves and our roles, self-esteem. This is one of the battle cries of our society. Self-esteem, low self-esteem. I have low self-esteem. You're low self-esteem. Like, you know, I'm okay, you're okay, everybody has low self-esteem, it's okay, right? That's like the modern, you know, mantra. It used to be in Europe they had other problems. But in America we have low self-esteem. What do you mean you have low self-esteem? Because Hashem made you. Hashem put you in this role. Hashem gave you a role. Nobody else but you can fulfill this role. I am Hashem, your personal God. I care about you personally. I said over a story, there was recently an event, a young woman, Shabbaton, and they asked me to speak Friday night. I really want to be an iconoclast. I'm really not in the mood of just looking like a regular rabbi, because I'm not in the mood of doing that. You know, I'm from Silver Spring also. That's, you know, just gives me a little more power to do that. So I said, you know, that the Satmarov said that if you believe all Chassidish stories, if you don't believe any Chassidish story, you're not preparers. If you believe all of them, you're a fool. So with that introduction, I want to tell you a story. So I was walking to yeshiva a few days ago, and I heard this little voice talking to me. I said, there's nobody there. There's nobody there. I don't see anybody. Who's talking to me? I said, who's talking to me? And I hear the voice again, Rabbi Reingold. I looked down, and this ant was talking to me. This little ant on the ground was talking to me. I said, Rabbi Reingold, you're really wonderful. I think you're great. I said, okay. Rabbi Reingold, we decided to give you the honorary title of the Rabbi of the Ants. You're so wonderful. And I said, you know, ants, you know, I'll try not to step on you, but like, you got to be kidding. It doesn't really make my day. Now, a little bit of COVID you can get from an ant is also not bad. You know, everybody needs a little bit of COVID, right? You know, you take it wherever you can get it. So, but from it, you know, but like, you know, really? And the girls didn't believe me. I don't know why. They didn't believe me. After that, Hakdoma, I told them, you know, so I don't understand. You come to Kadosh Baruch Hu, the gap between an ant and myself is much less than the gap between a human being and Hashem. And we say, Bershman, you're wonderful because you're a lekavra. That's a praise? It's an insult. Well, how's that a praise? And not only that, you're also the K Yitzchak. Oh, wow. You know, like, you know, So like, you're the rabbi dance, you know, like, you know, put it like next to my title, you know, the phone book, you know, Rabbi of the Ants. I mean, like, you know, I mean, like, really? What's going on? Akash Baruch loves Klaiso so much, and it was so important to him. He's, to him, it's a praise. He's a look after him. He's a look at Yitzchak. He's a look at Yaakov. That's what it means, the first Baruch Hashem Esrei. So I told the girls. He said, but the Seder, and that's what Rosh Hashanah was saying, I am the Shem, I am your God. By taking out of Mitzvah, that's what I did. So like, what is he saying? We're the most important beings in the whole Bria. You know, Jupiter doesn't come anywhere near to me in the importance of a Jew. Alpha Centauri doesn't come. A sun, the gigantic sun, is not as important as a Jew. Low self-esteem. Now, everybody agrees that the sun is pretty important. Without the sun, like, it wouldn't really go, right? You're more important. That's a message. Okay, where do we find that, Simon Goda? Where do we find that Hashem loves us? Hashem, so, again, it's one of those things, you look down the list. Kiddush, right? The Rishon says that the Shekhtom is something to see, well, the Rishon is Makadosh us. And Verotzavonu, he wants us. I mean, just stop there. I almost think that you can't finish the Haggadah. You can't finish Kiddush. You should, right? Verotzavonu, you should just stop there. Shabbokhavonu mikolom, right? Roman mikolom shayn. Shabbokhavonu mikolom, Roman mikolom, right? You should, like, supposed to stop there and get up and dance around the table for like 3 hours. Just stop right there. That's all you gotta do. Okay, good. Kiddush. Now you make it to Holach Ma'anyo, you know, and Avod Meyinu, and because you're Hashem Mitzrayim, then the Baruch Shem after Chazal Yisrael, Behisha Amda, Behir Mitzrayim. I mean, you find it. It's all there. Any place you want to say Hashem loves us, you know, where it should like put X's where you can't say it. You know, it's everywhere. It's all, it's the whole gonna just bursting with that thought. Okay. And that, the next message to be. So, look who we are. Believe in ourselves and our roles, self-esteem. So, you want to find places for self-esteem, and I have some places where I marked it for self-esteem. And one of them is of course, my Russia. Right? I think my Russia problem is he has low self-esteem. Like, you know, modern psychoanalysis of the Russia. He says, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is interested in me. He says, my God. Right? Right? So how do you know the difference between Chacham and Rasha? Chacham says Hashem Elokeinu. And the Rasha doesn't say that. He doesn't see him, that's the relationship. Doesn't see the relationship. He has low self-esteem. Okay. A Karsa Toiv to Kadosh Baruch Hu and a Karsa Toiv, which Chazal say, if you don't have a Karsa Toiv to people, you don't have a Karsa Toiv to Hashem. Paro didn't have a Karsa Toiv to Yosef, eventually lost his Karsa Toiv to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now a Karsa Toiv, really, the purpose of a Karsa Toiv is to recognize the good. And so sometimes we kvetch too much, and you know, it's not from bad. Like, you know, we come home like, you know, how was your day? So what do I share? I want a little bit of empathy, a little bit of sympathy. So I share the things which didn't go right. You know, right? You don't want not to share my day. You know, it was a really hard day. I had this one wrong. You know, no, don't tell me that. Just tell me the good parts. That'd be pretty insulting, right? Okay, so I tell you the bad parts, okay? Good. So you had such a bad day? No, it wasn't so bad, you know, like, you know. So, and my kid hears me kvetching, you know, like day after day after day after day, because I tell my wife the bad parts, you know, like, okay? Like, so, wow, you know, he's such a kvetch. It's good. Life is good. When I moved here to Silver Spring, I was in Tel Shiva before I moved here for 23 years. So I was not from, then I went to Tel Shiva. I basically became frum. Hashem Shabbos for 4 weeks before I went to yeshiva, so I didn't really have, and that was in camp in Tel Shiva. So I went to Tel Shiva, and my experience of Yiddishkeit was Tel Shiva. So I had 23 years of experience of being in a yeshiva, that's Yiddishkeit. And a yeshiva is pretty intense and pretty, you know, focused, and that's like, you know, chumras and, you know, long davening, you know, and, you know, being makhal and everything, etc. And I came to Silver Spring almost 19 years ago. And so I went back for Sukkot. to visit my, you know, my family's back. It was my mother lives there, my sister lives there, my sister-in-law lives there. Rishiva was there. So the whole morning I went to visit my Rishiva, Rishiva Chaim Stein, Zichron Livracha. So he asked me, how's it going? And the conversation was in Yiddish. So I told him, you know, I started kretching. I didn't like this, I didn't like that, I didn't like this, this bothered me, that bothered me, like, you know, this I missed this about yeshiva and that about yeshiva. If I remember, also, I missed Yom and the Roy and Tells Yeshiva. Now, anybody who's familiar with the yeshiva world understands that the Tells or Yom and the Roy is like an experience. It has like a shame over being an experience, and it's absolutely beautiful and gorgeous. And, you know, of course, comes Yom and the Roy, and I'm picturing the yeshiva, Tells Yeshiva, and I'm picturing the Mizrachvant of my Rebbeim, and I'm picturing myself in the Mizrachvant over here, and I'm thinking, what are you doing here? Like, why am I here again? Remind me, like, you know, I gotta be kidding, you know? So I went back there, and I told my yeshiva, you know, he says, I started kvetching. So I got about three sentences into my kvetch. And he interrupts me, he says, is it 80% good? I said, yes. He says, life doesn't get better than 80%. What are you learning? Oh, but Master, how'd you learn the Pshat and the Ramban? End the conversation. You know, stop dead in the tracks, you know, let's move on to life, you know. And he's right. So if you're helping 80%, you're a happy person. That's what I mean, a chorus of time is recognizing the good. Some people just focus on the bad. What they didn't do for me, you know. Some of us focus on the good. So, excuse me for, you know, being a little bit of levity, because of course, you know, I'm a very serious person, and I would never say a joke. But anyway, so there's this fellow who has a dog, and this dog is very, very accomplished. He can teach him a lot of tricks, and he keeps telling his neighbor about my dog. You can teach him this, you can teach him that, And the guy's like, you know, I'm sick and tired of hearing about this dog already. She says, okay, you want to come see the dog? She says, yeah, I want to come see that. No, that was the point all along, right? Come and see that, show off his dog. So he comes in, and he says, I want to see what your dog is. It's great, no problem. So he takes the stick, and he says to the dog, you know, Fido, he says, Fido, fetch. Throws the stick. The dog turns to the master and says, he says in Yiddish, because you know, it's a Jewish joke. I'll give it to you in English, because he says, you know, I'm an old dog. And I'm very tired. I have arthritis already. What do you want for my life? Leave me alone. Lost my leben. What's up the man on yorn? It's been an out the bane. What's up the man on yorn? He says to him, what's up the man on yorn? And the leben's like, whoa, like how this happened over here? He says, what happened? He says, he thought I said kvetch. Okay, so, you know, that's us. You know, you want to get a message across to the kids, to the family. You know, we kvetch. Stop kvetching so much and focusing on the good, and then you'll feel a Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence and a Kadosh Baruch Hu's love and a Kadosh Baruch Hu's care and his concern. And you'll be nice. You'll see how people are pretty nice. We focus on, you know, people are not always nice. Sometimes people give you a sour look. A lot of times it's not about you. I had a story in yeshiva that this fellow came into yeshiva with a chip on his shoulder, that, you know, that rabbis don't like him. And of course, out of the two rabbis in yeshiva, I'm the more rabbi of the two rabbis. I'm the more like, you know, I have my attitude. As far as he was concerned, she decided I didn't like him. I finally thought, you know, why are we having this difficulty in our relationship? I asked him one time, like point blank. He says, because you give me these dirty looks during Davin. You know, I says, I don't want to burst your bubble. I'm looking at the guy behind you. Like, why do you think I'm looking at you? You know, like, really? He said, yeah. So that took care of that. So like, stop thinking I'm looking at you with dirty looks. I'm looking at the guy behind you. I'm looking inside myself. You know, okay. The next part is the 13, 14, 15, 16. The importance of doing, not just believing. Yochum Rosh Chodesh. No, not Rosh Chodesh. Why Rosh Chodesh? Because that's when Moshe Rabbeinu was given the tzibah to Klal Yisrael. He gave over to Klal Yisrael. And he told them about so the beginning of this already, it's the time to start focusing. And, you know, so we should already start saying the story. No. Bayamahu. Imi Bayamahu, Yochum Rosh Chodesh. No. So that's what says why. You know, we have a problem. We are not philosophizers. You sit and talk about Rosh Chodesh, what's the message to the kids? Interesting thought. That's all it is. When you say it the night of the Seder, then you eat the matzah and you eat the more, then it's real. It was translated into something real. Not just a matzah. It's not just an interesting thought. We live this. I had a conversation recently with a person who was in the hospital, you know, and the caseworker was, you know, was discussing, you know, bringing together different people, etc. One of the questions was Chometz Pesach, and a person was with a, you know, life-threatening situation, you know. And then this like very well-meaning, trying to like figure, what's about eating a little bit of bread? You know, like, it's not the end of the world. You know, like, you know, God doesn't mind if you eat a little bit of bread. So, I mean, you met the very, so I explained, you know, we believe the importance of those rules and regulations, right? These rules and regulations allow you to take advantage of something. So I gave the therapist, you know, who's involved in the case, gave them, you know, three examples. I said the first example is basketball. You know, if you don't follow any rules, you just play basketball, you just don't get, climb up the thing and stick it inside. It's no fun. The challenge of basketball is only because there's rules. You know, rules, like what's the big spritz? A person goes to college, right? So he's not sure what he wants to do with his life. So he decides, you know, he'll take this course or that course or this thing. You know, he'll like take everything, you know. After like a little while, he says, you know, I can't handle this. So he says, you know what? I'm dropping all of the engineering courses because I'm not really interested in becoming an engineer. And all of the law courses, I'm not really becoming a lawyer. You know, I want to focus on biology and become a doctor, etc. So he's probably never going to become a lawyer, probably never going to become an architect or an engineer. But by limiting himself, he's able to focus and do what he has to do. So limits, rules and regulations help you focus and accomplish something. So life has rules and regulations also. And we have to know how exactly these rules and regulations help us take advantage of what life has to offer. We'll work on it, but it's not a foreign concept that's important to us. And we've had our moments in our life where we feel that, so we got to translate it into doing, not just believing. That means made a service. That means a commitment and a work ethic. That means growth in Torah knowledge. That means we got to really work on this. It's a two way street. God took us out of Mitzrayim, and He said, "Okay, here's the deal. I want you to commit to it." Okay. Two more things. Now, where do you want to find that in the Haggadah? So, where do you want to find that in the Haggadah? So, excuse me, I couldn't fit everything in one page, unless it would be like so microscopic that I would have had the handouts, my magnifying glasses. I didn't order the ones from China enough time to get it before this year. So, you can find them, you know, but by the places where I focused on were. On the doing, so one of them obviously is Yochum Rosh Chodesh, like I told you. Okay, right. Vayni Day Lishol, but where's also Shem? The Rashi says in Chumash. No, not a big shikul Torah. Rashi. But where's also Shem Libesesim Mitzrayim? Translate the sentence. In order for this, Hashem did for me when He took me out of Mitzrayim. What's this? Rashi says, I should keep the mitzvahs. The goal of all this was to keep the mitzvahs. That was the goal. So the Rashba takes it and expands on that thought. The Rashba says, and the Beis Halevi says the same idea. I'm not sure if he quotes the Rashba or not. The Rashba says, we have it backwards. We think that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. And then He commemorated Yetzias Mitzrayim by giving us the mitzvahs of Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. That's not, what Rashi's telling you, that's not the story. Hashem wanted to give us the mitzvahs of Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. But they're not so geschmack without a reason. So He gave us, Yetzias Mitzrayim, in order to allow us to have the mitzvahs of Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. That's how the Beis Halevi understands what Rashi is saying. Now that's an interesting twist. Right? That's what Vorzel shows up and says, Mitzrayim. The goal is to create a life where Torah mitzvahs are important to us. So Rashi says, okay, you know, I'm going to come and tell you the part. So Rashi says, I'm going to like make a great show, and a really big show, and you're going to be really excited about this, and therefore you're going to want to keep the mitzvahs. But that's the kavanah. So you can then expand on all the stories and say, okay, and why did Rashi do this? Because He loves Klal Yisrael. And how did He express that love? Because He gave us Torah mitzvahs. I want to give you one example, I have a problem. Like everybody has the other side of their brain, you know. So my most of my day is spent in the world of thinking. That's what I do. I get paid for doing for a living. I like working with my hands. You know, my wife has the same thing, and her summer projects are always something with her hands. You know, like, you know, she's building whatever, right? So I love kashrut for Pesach. It's like so geschmack. You're being oisik with your hands, with your body, effort in the Hashem's mitzvahs. I was very frustrated. I went to bake matzahs this year, every year. So it used to be my job was rolling. And it's a great job. Because you're there for like 2.5 to 3 hours, and you have no rest for 3 hours. There's more dough coming, and more dough coming, and more dough coming, and you can't let the dough for a minute without any work, and you're busy. You know, it's like one of these games of the kids, like things popping up, and you're popping this one, and popping that one, and you're rolling, and you're rolling, and you're exhausted. And I feel so refreshed afterwards. This year they gave me the job of choosing which matzahs were good. So I had to sit there and focus with my mind again. And it wasn't a relaxation for me. And it's very pressured. I'm focusing in. This is good. That was also pressure. Like the other part, they give you enough of a break. You go to wash off all of the dough off your hands, clean, dry it very well, show your hands to the mashgiach to make sure that everything is clean, and start over again. And that's the job. I like building a sukkah. It's like you put your body into building a sukkah, and you work at it. Remember the first year when we built this and we put it together, after I finished, I started dancing inside my sukkah. I was just like so excited. I built a sukkah. Like a brush and sukkah. Look, I built a sukkah. Not because it's, wow, look, the competition. I mean, you know, I didn't, my wife actually made the panels. I put it together, to get this right. I put together the sukkah properly, right? And it stood, and it's, you know, Baruch Hashem, right? That wasn't the point of the accomplishment. The point was, you got a chance to do, not just to think. So, you know, I didn't go dancing on the front lawn, you know, probably should have done that, but like, you know, sometimes they call it, neighbors get a little bit nervous sometimes. Okay. That's my story. You can tell your own story of, you know, what mitzvah excites you, what mitzvah you get excited about, you feel good about, you get interested in, and you feel good about doing it. Right? Each one has their own mitzvah. Okay. I'm going to skip number 17 for a second. Talk to Hashem. Obviously, one of these auras that hits you, like, and you're like wondering, like, where was I all these years? Yes, let's go back. So, Kisavai, there are 6 psukim. And I want to ask you, which pause, and so what's exactly is happening? Let's just give you a little bit of understanding of the binyan of the Haggadah. The binyan of the Haggadah is that when a person would come up to the Beis HaMikdash to bring Bikurim, he would tell a story. And he wouldn't just start from, you know, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem, I have Bikurim, thank you for the good crop for the year. He would give a background of the history of Klal Yisrael. And he would do it in a very concise fashion. Right? And the Torah chose that the story starts from going down to Mitzrayim. So let's look at the Pesukim. So the Pesukim are, the first Pesuk is, we went down to Mitzrayim, and we were a very small nation, we became a very large nation. Pesuk number one. Pasuk number two, the Mitzrayim enslaved us, afflicted us, hurt us, pained us, horrible things. Now what happens in the Haggadah is we take each word or each phrase from that and we then expand upon it and we bring Pesukim else from the Torah which talks about it more at length. Okay, the third Pasuk is, we davened to Hashem and Hashem heard us. The fourth Pasuk is Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim with tremendous wonders. The fifth Pasuk is Hashem brought us to Eretz Yisrael and gave us Eretz Yisrael. The sixth pasuk is I'm bringing my parents. Which pasuk is not necessary? We're trying to make the story as concise as possible. So, Bashem chose to start from going down to Mitzrayim. That's not my business. We down to Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim afflicted us. Hashem took us out, gave us Eretz Yisrael, and here are the fruits. Which pasuk did I skip?
They prayed.
Why is it there? If our goal is to make it as concise as possible, here's the story. They went down to Mitzrayim, they afflicted us, Hashem took us out, gave us Eretz Israel, and here's the fruits. But Yitzhak HaLashem L'Kev, Vesenu V'yar Hashem L'Sanyenu, Yishma, Kolenu V'yar L'Sanyenu, V'Sanyenu, V'Sam Olenu. Why is it there? The answer is because that was the goal. The goal was to have a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch. That was the whole purpose. The whole purpose was to develop that you can talk to Hashem personally. Till then, they believed, Ramo Shalom Kabbalah, you're brushing on each other than human beings. Rosh says, yes, I am. I'm so interested. You can talk to me 3 times a day and ask whatever you need. I'm interested. I want to hear. I'm interested. That was the goal, to have a personal God. You can't skip that pasuk. That is the whole purpose of the whole night. is to get that message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is interested in us. He cares about us. He wants to hear from us. So talk to him. Okay, so where do you throw that in? Okay, obviously, I think you would find the easiest clue is the pasuk when Yitzhak Hashem l'kei avoseinu, by Shemashem l'koleinu, by Arsoneinu. That would be the best place to talk about it. At least according to that, that's the place that I chose. And what story can you say? Somewhere in these sheets. Really, yeah. 10 markers. Halu Abde Hashem, B'seis Hashem Mitzrayim. So where would you have... What's your personal story about tefillah? I mean, hopefully we all have personal stories about tefillah. We spoke. And the greatest story about tefillah is that we speak to Hashem every morning. The story of tefillah is that Hashem answered our prayers. I had a story like this. So, I was in Kerala, and the finances in Kerala are not the greatest, especially when the yeshiva was behind 3 months in the pay, and my wife's school was also behind about 3 months in the pay. And the bill came. And I didn't have money to pay for the bill, and I didn't like not paying bills. So I went to Mincha that day, and was a little bit perturbed, disturbed, concerned. I started saying Ashrei. I got to the Pasuk, B'seh Ashrei, it means the Baruch Hashem takes care totally. So I said to myself, I don't understand. Do I believe this Pasuk or not? If I believe it, so why am I worried? If it's supposed to be here, it'll be here. When and how, we'll work it out. And if I don't believe it, why am I saying it? It's not just, say something, check off, I said that phrase. So, I want to stop and think about this pasuk, and I repeated it again, a second time. I said, I'm not leaving this pasuk until I relax. The third time, the fourth time. It took me about 40 times to say the pasuk until I felt, I relaxed. So I heard the story once by a shmuz. So I said, what happened, Rebbe? I spoke to Hashem. That's what happened. The story has to be the Chassidish miracle, and then all of a sudden I found an envelope in the street for like $1 million. So I said, no. What happened was I spoke to Hashem. I davened. Maybe if you want to be honest, one of the first times in my life I really davened. I really spoke to Hashem. I really felt His presence. That's what happened. So if you want to know the real story, was at the end of the week I got a check from an old friend of mine for $1,000. He says, I haven't been in touch with you in years, and I thought maybe you could use some money, and he sent me a check for $1,000. But that's the Chassidish part of the Maaseh. That's not the point. There's a Maaseh once with the Chofetz Chaim, that the Chofetz Chaim's son went to Varsha, and somebody recognized the Chofetz Chaim, that he was the Chofetz Chaim's son. And of course, Varsha is a city which is full of Hasidim. So they asked the Chofetz Chaim's son to say over a moifis from the Tate, miracle that his father wrought, like all the rabbis wrought. And he says, no, Gordish, Gordish, Gordish. He's a real Litvak. So they kept pushing him, He says, listen, the moifis of my father is the following. By all of the rabbis, the godless is Tzadik Geiser, Rakadish Baruch Makayim. The tzaddik decrees, and Hashem listens. But my father, the godless, is Kadosh Baruch Hu Goyzer Vatzaddik Mikayim. That's the goal. Right? Talk to Hashem. That's the godless. Right? Whatever happens afterwards is that's like anti-Kemetic, totally. Okay, number 17. A lot of us would like to give a message to our children of honesty. It's important to be honest. And we know Emes is the Chesima of Kadosh Baruch Hu, etc. And I want to find an excuse somewhere in the Haggadah. Where do we talk about honesty in the Haggadah? Right? Again, you can just fetch it and it says, Hashem Chagadol Be'emes, something like that. It says the word emes. I know what's up, what I mean. Right? So if you notice on my list, I really kvetched in this one. I have to be honest. Right? And I found two places that I felt comfortable putting it in. And even that was pushing it a little bit, but I had to be honest. So I have to tell you that. First one is Manishtana. When you ask questions, you're being honest. You don't understand, so I don't understand. And that's a very important message to a child. When you don't understand, say you don't understand and ask. That's the only way you're going to learn. So, that's like my first one. That's like fetching it a little bit, not too bad. Okay. That's probably not what we meant. And I remember, I went through, you know, you go down the list, you know, and finally I get to, like, you know, keep going. I get to the last one. I said, I have to check the last one. I can't. I did all these. So I checked the last one. Baruch Hashem Golan, right? And what's, if we want to understand, right, why we map it in Emes? I have to tell you a story. This is where maybe I'm going off on a tangent a little bit. You know, the goal isn't Emes. The goal is what's in Hashem. The goal is service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, honestly. Serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu as best as we can. That's our honestly. So there's a story like this, which I do not like. So I want to tell you a story that I do not like. You might tell me you've heard the story before, right? So there's a story with, there was a Gadol in Europe, Chassidish Rebbe, Gadol in Europe, who was Makbid Gomer on Emes. Makbid Gomer, he never said checker. He'd walk into the, you know, he'd walk in from the outside, is it raining outside? He says, it was a minute ago. I know what it is right now. I know it was a minute ago. And that was his level of, you know, just like automatic. He never said anything which could even in any way, shape, or form possibly misconstrued. Perfectly Emes. Okay, so there was a story in his town that there's an individual who was caught smuggling. And in those days, smuggling was punishable by death. You know, the government didn't like that too much. And they were trying to save him. And finally, the judge, and they were arguing this, and I don't think the judge was like, didn't sound right. You know, so you know what? If the rabbi comes, I know the rabbi never lies. If the rabbi comes and says he didn't do it, he's off the hook. That wasn't true. He did do it. Right? If the rabbi says that he didn't do it, his life will be spared. And if not, he's going to be killed. Okay, so Rabbi said, what's the halacha? What should he do? Lie, right? Right? What does the Russian want him to do? Let's say it like that. What is the mitzvah satara? V'chai behem. Right? V'chai behem. It means you have a chiv to save a life. You mekalel Shabbos. You get a Yom Kippur. Now you eat chazer, you eat chaylev, you eat dam, whatever you need to save a life, except for the gemal chamurz. It's not about a zara. It's like the rice. It's not shvichas damim. There's no shaila that the right thing to do is to go to court and say he didn't do it. But this rabbi, he never said a sheker in his lifetime since he was a bar mitzvah boy. So what did he do? He davened to Hashem that he should be nifter before the case, so he shouldn't have to lie. And he was Zoycha, the tefillahs were in his Kabul, and he died the night before the case. I hate the Maisa. I hate it with a passion. I remember people like, you see how Emes is so important. So we got it all wrong, everybody say. Emes is very important. Because Baruch Hashem is Emes, and Emes is Emes, because the Bershon said so. And the Bershon says lie, you ask, how much? We're here to serve a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And maybe that's my message of Emes. It's a shtickle shvach, I'm asking. You want to know the truth? It's a shtickle shvach. But I got to the last one.
You left that mitzvah.
Mitzvah?
Yes. That's honesty.
Mitzvah, there was a rabbi said, okay.
Yes, you didn't have to say that.
Okay, right, okay. You know, I'm about tshuva. I don't have to say that part, right? Okay, here, I got...
Skip straight from Avon Mitzvah Bin Yaakov and skip right to...
Okay, good. Anyway, this is my suggestion. These are my thoughts. These are my ideas. I hope that maybe something struck a chord, something resonated with you, it inspired you to think of a something, your own message, your own, that you would want to share, and an own story maybe you can say with it, and a place in the gutter where you can find it. And if you have a 19 and a 20 and a 21, I'll be the happiest person in the room. Thank you for listening. Thank you.